Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
You're about to hear a favorite from the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze Archive. This show originally aired on March 23rd, 2017.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry. I keep running into people who say to me, Chris, they say, sometimes it just makes me too hungry. So I just want to say, you know, maybe you should have a snack before the show starts.
Get and, pretzels ready.
You know, it does the same to us, too. You know, it makes us excited. We try and defer that energy and cook something or go out and eat something. I get it. Listen, we're going to celebrate cultures on this show. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributor Chris Prosperi and Robin Doyen-Aiken is also senior producer of the show. We just celebrated, Chris and Robin, Persian-Iranian New Year, and I would invite you to find a good Persian cook, home cook, or a restaurant. It is gorgeous food. I like to celebrate holidays from different cultures and because it gets me to try new things. Once I was roaming around in Boston and someone said to me, okay, well, let's eat at this Burmese restaurant. The food was so hot. But I knew that if I had asked for it a different way, I would have loved the spice mixture in that culture. Mm-hmm. We can go to Afghani restaurants right now. Certainly Chinese, French, Italian.
Yeah. You know, South African, North African, Egyptian.
Do you remember?
I mean, just all that stuff.
One time in New Haven, I was driving down the road. I've probably said this on the show before. Yeah. Forgive me. But driving right down the main street, and there was a sign that had popped up. The main street in New Haven is Chapel. All kinds of restaurants, stores, everything down there. Yale University. And the sign pops up, and it says, Polish Indian Cuisine. I know. I'm just... can't stand it that I didn't go in there. There was a place in Wallingford that specialized in Mexican Italian.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of see, but Polish Indian, I wish I had gone.
What, you know, pierogies with a kind of curry sauce is what I'm thinking in my head. I don't know. Okay. I have no idea. Yep. Try some things.
Especially when you're in the cities, right? Like New Haven, Hartford. Hartford has great little Jamaican restaurants.
Right? Really?
And it just gets you out of the norm. And maybe you're heading to an Italian restaurant because it's a normal thing and it's a restaurant you go to. Just take a left turn and go try something new. There's
West Haven, Connecticut, Afghanistan.
Sure.
Spain. Over in East Haven, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. You know, this just goes
Puerto
on.
Rican in the Hartford area, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. And
falafel in Waterbury.
Yeah, falafels in Waterbury. Right. Sure.
By the way, back to Persian for a second, Iranian food. I have friends who are Persian-Iranian, and I've eaten at their homes, and there is, if you find a good Persian restaurant, there is a crispy rice dish. It's a classic thing. It takes a long time to make. It is so delicious. Mm. So try that among many other things. We're going to tell you about how to make a special thing in Rhode Island that goes with some Easter food, because Easter is on the way. We've got a special matzah thing coming
Passover
your way.
Right around the corner.
Passover coming. We've got a little conversation with someone who's Korean. So we're going to tell you about where to go to get good Korean food. So here we go. For ham, Chris and Robin, one of my favorite things is to take a jar of peach preserves or peach jam and then coat the ham on the outside and put in some cloves, stud it with a few cloves and bake it in the oven. Of course, it really crisps up on the outside because of the sugar in the jam, but that peach flavor is really something.
Do you foil? I'm a foil guy.
No, I don't.
All right, so what I mean when I'm a foil guy, I take my ham and I glaze it. I like a mustard because I like that kind of spiciness. Yeah. So I'll do a like Dijon and whole grain mustard. I'll mix in a little bourbon. And then I like make an envelope with the foil and I sort of make a package and they put that in the roasting pan.
Do you leave
pan.
A little space around?
No, I get him or right up against and a nice and tight and I bake it in that foil pouch.
What does that do?
It just keeps, for me, it keeps all the moisture in, all the juices in. It doesn't dry out. And then for, I don't know, the last 15 minutes, I'll pop it open. I'll crank my oven and I'll get the glaze to like get crispy.
I just like it
because when you cook it in the foil, it does cook a little faster, but it also keeps all that juices inside.
I like that. And now you're making me want to put just a little bourbon in my peach jam. Uh-huh. Wouldn't that be good?
Only going to make it better.
I know. Really, seriously. And if you can't have alcohol, go just with the peach jam.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't want to have alcohol, I should say. Robin, are you a ham?
We're traditional, you know, brown sugar glaze. I try to keep the ham really simple because I know that I'm going to have that all week.
We're working on this, so, you know, here's hoping, fingers crossed. We're going to try to bring you on the next show a little something about what to do with that leftover ham, and it includes a ham carbonara on pasta. Okay, now we're going to just think of it in your mind and create that. Just pretend that the bacon that you would have in a traditional carbonara substitute the ham. Okay, but we're going to tell you about that next week.
But before we move off ham, we have to note that you can get like one of the best hams in the world here in Connecticut, and that's Nodine's.
In
Goshen, Connecticut, where I spent most of my summers as a kid.
And why is it among the best?
I agree. It is just the perfect amount of salt and smoky and sweet. Not too sweet, not too salty. And a little secret, and it'll probably kill me if I say it, but there's a famous chef. There's a famous chef on Food Network, and he orders all his Easter stuff, including his ham, sent out to his house, UPS, from Nodine's every year. But I mean, just tell you, that's where you get your ham this year.
You little devil.
No, it's such
You're going to be in
I know he's going to yell, but I'm telling you, the ham
you
is so
what?
Good.
Yeah.
And get a half pound of beef jerky while you're there. Because
you know
the
what?
Best.
While you're there, get a half pound of everything because I love a road trip to that place. I suddenly say, I'd like some smoked turkey and give me some smoked ham and smoked cheese. And, you know, suddenly I've got a whole giant thing going on. Okay. When you were growing up, I don't know if your parents did ham. Chris, your mother was Austrian, your father French.
Easter.
My mother, Scottish. Yep. I don't know where she got this, whether it was reading 50s magazines or what, because this isn't Scottish. Yep. But she would take a ham and pour a bottle of Coke over it and then stud it all over with cloves. Yep. And into the oven it would go. It would get this caramelized thing from the Coke. And it was delicious.
It's a classic American. And down south in the Dallas and Texas area, it was Dr. Pepper. Same recipe you're talking about.
So, you know, it's all
Dr.
the sugar.
Pepper. It's
just
sugar
the sugar
and the
vehicle.
Caramel. Because
you could probably
put
ginger ale on it.
And it's got that caramel already in there, right? So that makes it just so much better.
Robin, you grew up with ham.
It's the same one that I make with just the brown sugar.
See how we revert to tradition.
And sometimes pineapple. That might be a 50s magazine.
You're supposed to, right?
With cherries, right? You have to stick them.
How many magazine pictures has that been in, right? The studded with the pineapple.
Do I remember Gourmet? I think Gourmet even did that.
Every magazine on earth had that at one time.
And if you come upon those old copies, the color is all kind of crazy. You know, it looks like something kind of
Technicolor.
Well, in my world, if you're having ham, and you know, we shouldn't overlook lamb because spring lamb, it's a huge thing. But to come back to ham, if you're having ham, you need two other things. You need fresh asparagus, which is coming to us very shortly. And do you remember, can we put this up? Brown butter, easy blender, hollandaise to put on that asparagus.
I forgot about that.
We'll
that would be perfect for the holidays.
And even if you don't do the brown butter version, which takes a minute to just brown the butter, but if you don't want to do that and it freaks you out, just use our recipe for
the blender hollandaise.
And I think, Chris, this was your recipe.
Yes, so simple.
You cannot fail with this thing. Nope. It is so delicious.
Blender does all the work for you.
So that's at foodschmooze.org. And if you ask me, because I said two things besides the asparagus.
Yeah, what's the other one?
The other thing, and I think it is the best thing on the table, better than the ham, better than anything else, biscuits.
You want to have biscuits
with your ham.
Soak
right?
up all that juice.
Oh, it's just so good. Butter on them.
Flaky.
Oh, There's so many recipes for biscuits, so we're not going to presume to tell you what to do. But there are some super easy biscuit recipes out there and super complicated ones. But I'd say if you're not used to making biscuits, do the easy way. You could go to the supermarket
and get
Poppin' Fresh.
I can't remember. Whatever the last holidays, one of my servers brought in one of the tubes.
Crescent rolls?
It was the biscuits. You know, I haven't seen them in years. I totally forgot what they were. And you sort of, you twist it a little and it sort of pops open.
Yep.
And then they sort of break apart and you just put them on a cookie sheet and you throw them in the oven.
But can I just add a quick thing here? Really, one thing you want to do is just brush them, the tops, with a little melted butter.
We did.
You did?
We did, and a little sea salt on top because...
Oh!
Now, these were not... We weren't selling these. We were just... He brought in a tube, and he's like, could you bake these for us? It's a long shift. It's a holiday. I'm like, sure, I guess. And I tell you what, they were gone in a second, and everyone...
Did they taste chemical-like?
I don't know if it was just butter. I don't know what it was. I can't explain what it was, but they were simple.
Good.
They were easy.
Taste of childhood.
They were... In a blink, they were gone, and everyone... The whole staff loved them. So who's to say, right?
And can I invite you to look up a recipe for cream biscuits?
Cream biscuits.
These are the easiest biscuits in the world. If you are a non-biscuit maker, the easiest in the world. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's three ingredients.
Nice.
You don't have to do anything. You don't have to.
I'm all about
just
that.
Fabulous.
Especially on the holidays. Enough work already.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus, you need to make a little ham sandwich after with a good mustard and your leftover biscuits.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Ham and mustard.
Yeah,
you
that's
know.
It right
oh,
there.
Oh, that's
right?
Right. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say you're gluten-free or you're just a nut about cornbread, as I am.
Ooh.
I would like to talk about a thing. And it's cultural because this is a Rhode Island thing, Johnny cakes.
Yeah.
So Johnny cakes are really corn cakes, except that in most traditional cornbread corn cake recipes, you would have white flour. This ends up, not by intention, but it ends up being gluten-free. All you need is a cast iron skillet and a bowl. And in that bowl, the trick to Johnny cakes in Rhode Island is they insist on white cornmeal. There are some heritage places there that grind white cornmeal.
White corn, yeah.
Okay, so let's say you've got white cornmeal. You put it in the thing, in a bowl, with just a teaspoon of sugar. So you've got a cup of this white cornmeal, a teaspoon of sugar, a little pinch of salt, and then slowly you add a cup of boiling water. I made these last night. And you stir as you're slowly adding the boiling water. You know what you've got? Like a pancake batter, like kind of thicker consistency batter. Then you take a cast iron skillet to make Johnny cakes. You put a little slick of bacon grease. So if you're making bacon, do not throw that away.
That's right.
Throw it in a container and toss it in the freezer. You know, or let it cool and scrape it up with a spoon while it is solid and put it in a plastic thing and throw it in the freezer. You just stick a spoonful in the bottom, just a slick in the bottom of that cast iron skillet, and a spoonful, you get the skillet hot, a spoonful, spoonful, like you're making pancakes, and you wait for it to get golden crispy. So all that's in there is cornmeal and salt and oil.
And that's it.
And that is it. Golden crispy on one side. You got to watch it carefully because they turn fast.
Flip
them over, golden crispy on the other side, and then you just hold it in your hand and you eat it. You could eat it with a knife and fork with maple syrup. But if you are a cornbread nut the way I am, they are so
incredible.
That
would be so good with Easter. Right, with the ham
with the asparagus
and the hollandaise. I'm in.
And if you're a gluten-free person, you know, we know there are just millions of people now who are developing these allergies to the gluten in wheat. Well, this is your way to go. And if you're driving through Rhode Island on the way to the Cape, you got to look it up. You got to get Johnny Cakes.
Yeah. I like it.
You know, or make them at home yourself.
It's as easy as that.
That's it.
I'm being honest. I've never made them. Okay. I've read about them. I've heard them. I've eaten them. But I've never made them.
A cup of boiling water.
Yeah.
A sprinkle of salt to your taste. I like a lot of salt. Yeah. That's just the way I am.
Yeah.
A teaspoon of sugar. Yeah. You just pour that cup of boiling water in slowly and stir.
And a fine ground cornmeal?
Well, the white cornmeal has a special grind to it.
Gotcha.
That's why they do it there.
Yeah, Johnny cake.
But
Use cornmeal.
I don't even worry about it. Okay, so
it's going to be good no matter what.
This is good. I mean, please. I hope this makes your Easter. You know, or you're going to make biscuits, whatever you're going to do. I'm doing the cornmeal. I'm doing the Johnny cake thing. If you want to add a little bit more sugar. I guess you could do that too. It's up to you. All right. So we've got a lot of things. We're talking about celebrating the sort of holiday and cultural traditions that are all around us right now. You know, join with friends who are from other places and try their food. If you're lucky enough to get an invitation for a home-cooked meal, you are so lucky.
And that's how you try the new things, is because it's a holiday food and you're, you know, holidays are up for anything. It's the gateway into that culture.
I like that you're saying that, Robin. And if you want to spend a few days in Queens, the Queens section of New York, you can eat, yeah, this is where Chris was born.
Yeah.
You can eat around the world, and not only around the world,
borough.
But some of the best of around the world. Oh, the best street
best
food
Chinese,
on
best
the
Greek.
Planet. Right here in our region,
yeah.
Amazing food from around the world.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah, we were saying Jamaican and Hartford, Puerto Rico. Look for where the people from those places are eating, and
we've
you'll
got,
know
you've
got the good ones.
You know what we've got coming up? We're going to tell you how to make matzo nachos. We've got a wine for Easter that is fantastic, a Sauvignon Blanc. Really, really good. Mm-hmm. We've got all kinds of stuff coming your way. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. This show originally aired on March 23rd, 2017.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
We have a free podcast of the show for you, meaning you'll never miss a drop of pleasure. All you do is go to our website, you sign up for it once. It's that simple. It takes about 5 seconds. And then, bang, you know, the show comes to you in your inbox, and you can listen absolutely anytime you want. All right, I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, and Robin Doyon Aiken, who is not only a participant on the show, but the senior producer and a treasure, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, thank you.
And you know, you are so welcome. And you know,
and a great
who else?
Home cook for, right?
Yeah.
Well, it depends who you ask in my family.
You ask the kids, you ask Steve. Uh-huh. Okay, so I want to also say, I don't want to leave out our other treasures. I want to give special hugs to Alex Province. Mm-hmm. And a hug to Mark Raymond. These are our other buddies on the show who are all, let's just say, they're away right now. So what we're doing is celebrating all these various holidays that are coming up, and it's giving us a window into different cultures, and we're having a great time with that.
I tell you, food brings us together. Mm-hmm. Could solve all the world problems, I think.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
If you just did it over, instead of over a conference table, do it over a good meal.
Do you think? I love the sentiment of it. I really, really do. But I think about that they're probably serving some pretty good food at Camp David, and they haven't yet solved some of the world's problems there. But I agree with you that a lot of things disappear over a good meal.
It shows our commonality.
Yeah. So we've done the Persian New Year, which is just been with us, pomegranates and crispy rice and all these beautiful, beautiful things. And then we have coming up a matzo book, which tells you the most amazing things to do with matzo. We're going to talk with someone who's Korean in just a second, but we've been talking about a kind of spring southern tradition of ham and what to do because Easter is coming. And we have here a wine that I think is terrific with, matzo brei and with asparagus, which is very difficult to match. This is a wine called Nimbus Single Vineyard, but it's a Sauvignon Blanc. It is on our website.
It's a spring wine.
It's a beautiful spring wine. And this is from Chile, and it's from Viña Casablanca. The reason this is so great is there are Sauvignon Blancs all around the world. Some of my favorites are in New Zealand, Australia. And I like this in particular because in this valley, this vineyard is a single grape vineyard. So it's their own grapes. A lot of vineyards, like in the United States, buy grapes all over the place. They combine them. It's still an art to make a recipe. This vineyard does its own grapes only. It's harvested by hand. So this Nimbus Single Vineyard 2015 Sauvignon Blanc is delicious, and you will find it on the cheap side for $11 all the way up to about $15. So $11 to $15, depending on what your wine store wants
and
to do.
And it has that citrusy thing like the New Zealand's one do, right?
But it's very unusual for Sauvignon Blanc because there's a little melon. You know, it's not, and I don't mean sweet, but there's a little, somehow, a melon in there mixed in with the grapefruit. So it's a beautiful citrus.
Think this with your ham.
Yes.
And that asparagus and the hollandaise and the biscuits, right? This is a good one for that table.
Here's where to find it. We tell you everything you need to know at your wine store. We take a picture of the label. You spell it for them. You don't even have to pronounce it. You could show it to them. You want to call ahead so you don't make a wasted trip because wine stores can't stock everything. It's all posted at foodschmooze.org. You know how to spell schmooze. S-C-H, like school. M-O-O, like the cow, Z-E. Foodschmooze.org.
A great resource.
My Jewish friends are laughing at me right now. It's like, okay, so Chris, do you plant peas? You know, they always say St. Patrick's Day, so we're a little behind. But I think you could still probably squeak them in the ground.
Me? I am an end user. You know, I've tried. I have a black thumb.
You do?
The only thing I've ever had success with is I've done hydroponics down by the furnace, and that worked out well.
His hydroponic system.
I brought in the food, remember?
Basement was so stunning that it convinced me that anyone could do this. Look it up online, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's called VertiGrow, and it's a growing system. It's actually three pots, square pots that sit kitty corner to themselves, and in the middle is a pipe that goes up through. And the bottom, there's a big 5-gallon bin that it sits on, filled with the water, and then a little pump, and then it's on a timer, and it pumps the...
But the whole thing comes to you.
It all comes to you with the growing medium and everything. And I was going to even take it even a step further, and a lot of people are doing this now. In the bin, you can do fish. That fertilizes the plants, and then you have fried fish with your $50 salad.
Can I just say, hypocrite that I am, I can't do it. Can't do it. I'm sorry. They need bigger space.
They need bigger space. Okay. Well, then you can get fertilizers.
Pool. Do it in your swimming
then you
pool.
Can get, no, you can get natural fertilizers to put in the water.
Yeah. I forget.
I did arugula. I did a couple types of greens. I did grape tomatoes. I did basil and chives. You know what? It worked out really well.
So Robin is the lucky one here because she is married to Steve Aiken. And he is, well, give us a little profile. He is like the garden man.
He's my garden man, I'll say.
He's mine too.
He's a master gardener, went through the program at UConn, and is the editor of Fine Gardening magazine. And people always ask us about our garden, but we don't have a garden. We have several little gardens all over our property. My husband has done sun charts and things like that, so he knows where the best places for plants that need certain types of light and or lots of light or shade. And so we have our edible garden where we have, you know, beans, tomatoes, lettuces. We haven't started yet. Another week or so.
This is why I don't do it. No, but sun charts involved.
No, you know what though? That's brilliant as a concept. Yeah. Instead of doing one massive garden, to do them based on light, where your light falls.
Yeah, he'll only plant where he thinks the seedlings are going to do best.
Wow.
That's how we do. Basil goes crazy in the summer, so we have lots and lots of that. In fact, we're like sometimes trying to find other things to do with it besides
pesto. Do you see my hand going up?
Give it to us. Bring it in.
Bring it right in here. Chris, I don't want you to feel terrible because
I don't feel terrible.
You have a black thumb.
I'm an end user, though.
Oh, me too.
See, I'm the guy that can take your extra basil and show you 100 things to do with it. Yeah. I can use the stuff, but I just can't grow it.
I'm the Lucy Ricardo of gardening.
Are you?
Yeah. Last year, I drove all the way out to White Flower Farm and got two very special sun gold tomato plants.
Oh, yeah.
I decide I'm going to plant them at a weekend place on the North Fork of Long Island, get on the ferry, an hour and a half, and now I have to buy soil and pots, and I get it all set up. I'm looking around the driveway, Robin, to see where is
this
the sun
falling.
This is where
you need falling. The sun chart, yeah.
Yeah, that's my sun chart, and I see right there at the edge of the driveway is where the pot is going to go. And now I've got people helping me lift it.
Yeah, because it's going 200 right pounds there. Now?
About you 200 need
a lift?
It's all set. I get so excited because up it comes.
Salad time.
I called it Middleton Farms. Well, I wasn't the only one paying attention.
Gotcha. Oh, yep.
So I go out one morning, mowed down.
Deer.
This summer, I'm doing it again. I'm going to put some kind of net.
There are some like natural sprays that
deer
you can
repellents.
Use. No. They smell horrible.
I was
to
just
me.
Gonna
yeah,
say,
and then your neighbors are like, what are you doing? Yeah.
You know, that seaweed stuff smells like fish.
Yes.
And so it works, but, you know,
if
I don't
you,
think
I hear
so.
You get a I'm dog and that helps.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you get a dog, that
oh,
helps.
Oh, that would be a dream.
Away.
So if you're just joining us, earlier in the show, we've been walking through various cultures at this holiday time of year, so many holidays right now, and we got sidetracked on gardening, which I love because it is spring. So as we explore the food of many cultures, I want you to meet somebody that I bumped into. I was at Union League Cafe in downtown New Haven,
which is
a really good place, a French bistro. It's that kind of place where you just start talking to people, and I meet an architect, Martina Lind. She was with Cesar Pelli Architects for many, many years and has gone off on her own as a super consultant. She's a specialist in glass and architecture. But really, what did we talk about? She's Korean. And so I immediately wanted to talk with her about Korean food. We bonded over this. So I said, oh, you have to join us on the show. Architect Martina Lind, who loves Korean food and many other foods, lives in Madison, Connecticut. Welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Oh, thank you.
So great to have you on the show, Martina. Now, your mother, was she considered a good cook? Or maybe your father was the cook?
Good cooks are only appreciated by great eaters, and we're, I think, on both sides of my family, they're just full of great eaters.
Love that. When you're at home and you're cooking yourself, I know you're busy, you have kids and all that, but what would you say is your kind of weeknight go-to thing that's Korean?
We always have bundles of scallion.
Yeah.
And I would say my youngest favorite is probably the scallion pancakes. And you could probably find it at any Korean restaurant as an appetizer menu. But it's actually a great meal, also like a quick meal, because all you need is to cut the scallion very finely. And in a store, you could actually get this powder. It's basically a pancake mix.
Oh.
A little bit of oil, you know, just a regular vegetable oil, and it just fries up very nicely. And if you want to take it up a notch, you add some calamari. More traditionally, they would add oysters. So if you took it up that to the nicer notch, you would have oyster pancakes with scallions.
No,
yum.
Wait a minute.
No,
so first, doesn't it, Robin? I think Robin and I, and Chris, I don't know if you're in on this, but I think one of my favorite things at Asian restaurants are these scallion pancakes. So Martina, I am so thrilled that you mentioned that. Let me ask you, when you go out to eat, we were talking about this. You said in Connecticut, not so great in terms of Korean food for you.
No, not too much. You know, to be honest, my mother is such a great cook that what I grew up with was better than what I was able to get at these restaurants.
Yeah, that happens. That happens.
Yeah, then you want to kind of go home and just try to improvise best you can. And there are a couple of pretty decent grocery stores in New Haven where I kind of go, and they become one of my closest friends now.
I walk in and I say to the people who run the grocery store of some ethnicity, I say to them, I don't know anything about this. I would like to try some things. Would you help me? I want to make one thing. So what would you give me, a sauce?
If you like spicy, the Korean traditional sauce is the gochujang, which is a pepper paste.
Yeah, it's like their version of a hot miso. Can you pronounce it again? Because I always get it wrong.
Gochujang. gochujang. Tang yes. just means salt, and gochu means pepper.
Now, if I want to try food, if I'm not going to cook, but I want to try really good Korean food, and I'm willing to go into New York, because I know that's where you go, give me the name of a place that you go to.
I'm a child of the 80s in New York City, so my father, my parents always took us to Gangseo, right on Broadway.
Nice. Well, how do you spell that?
K-A-N-G and then S-U-H. I like ordering this tofu stew, and Ooh. It's basically seafood broth, and you'll see some shrimps in there or prawns and clams, and then they would have very soft tofu, just kind of floating. It's almost like a soft egg type of consistency.
Like a
and
little
then there's
pillow.
All these vegetables, and it's cooked in a very thick pottery. So by the time it gets to your table, it's still bubbling. And you could add rice to it. And sometimes they will crack an egg and let it just cook slowly.
Oh.
And it's just the most amazing, slightly spicy. I guess you could ask them to hold a spice. But
what's so fascinating to me is how many cultures, we see this in Middle Eastern culture, in Italian culture now, Korean culture, French culture, where you crack an egg into something mm-hmm. that's hot. And it
poaches,
you know,
in
Middle Eastern, that would be shakshuka. Mm-hmm. There's just in so many cultures. All right, now I've got to ask you, because this really intrigues me. This is architect Martina Lind, who lives in Madison, Connecticut, and is a consultant to Rochman Steel and Glass. Now, they're based in Bavaria, but of course they have people here. You're a specialist in architecture, in glass for people, because we see so many buildings being built with glass panels that are wild shapes. So tell me about this world that you're in. Why this?
When construction in 2009 started to slow down, there was a real interest by the European companies to get inside the U.S. You know, we've been kind of cheapening our buildings, and we've been putting little square windows, everything made out of aluminum, not the best material for windows. And yet we use it over and over and over. So this German company basically has the ability to super engineer the glazing system. So the glass is not just like a hole with a piece of transparent thing on it, but it's actually a part of a building with its own structure, its own performance values. And it's able to block certain kind of UV rays. It's able to become a real envelope of the building.
Wow, yeah. That's fascinating.
She is right about European architecture. They take it so much more seriously when it comes to glass and windows and energy efficiency.
Even using a fair amount of glass, if you do it right, you can have a kind of almost energy neutral space. Is that possible?
Yes, it is possible. So right now what we are using in America are double glazed. It's got two glass panes inside of a unit. Standard glass in most of current construction in Europe are required to be triple glazed. It's hard to sell that type of performance value still in America. You know, the most important thing is I think American people have this feeling that it's restrictive. I think it's under code and it's hard to make it. That makes it expensive. But the thing is, they have the ability to also push it in the design, so it's beautiful. Briefly, you and I talked about Grace Farms, and that's when you bring the performance and the structure and the beauty all together.
So we're talking about Fairfield County.
Mm-hmm. Fairfield County.
Grace Farms, which is just the most amazing place. I am so happy we connected with you. I love your expertise on this.
And food brings us all together.
And yeah, right. Well, yeah. If you want to reach our guest, Martina Lind, L-I-N-D, she's a specialist in glass. Just look up Martina Lind. Thank you so much for being a guest
Thank
on the
you
show.
So much.
You're just a dreamy person. Thank you. Let's see, what haven't we done in terms of culture? Let's do matzah, all right? We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week. And to find our food, wine, and cocktail recommendations, restaurants, hot topics, everything, videos, go to foodschmooze.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. This show originally aired on March 23rd, 2017.
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the east end of Long Island. That means, of course, the Hamptons. The senior producer of the show is Robin Doyon Aiken, and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. Of course, you can talk with us on Facebook, as everybody does. Search Faith Middleton, Food Schmooze. Okay, here's what we've got. I've been waiting for this. I want to say the words, Chris.
Go ahead.
Matzo nachos.
I love it.
Can you believe it? Our guest is David Kirchner. He is a Michelin-trained chef, spent many years running restaurants. He has his own private dining company right now, and he is the recipe creator behind this book called Matzo. 35 recipes for Passover and all year long. The author is Michelle Streit Heilbrunn. People who are into matzah will know that name. Okay, David, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Thank you, Faith. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. So right away, I want to get to matzah nachos. And this is with pickled jalapenos. What a great idea this is.
We really wanted to figure out ways of incorporating matzah into foods that we love on an everyday basis. So when Mikey and myself first sat down and did our recipe grid for the book, we basically just started listing all of these amazing, fun, everyday bites that we love, and then we're kind of working backwards to reverse engineer matzah into them.
What I'm wondering about, if I were creating this, the worry would be, are matzahs going to get mushy once the liquid of anything goes on them? And so how do you prevent that from happening?
The big trick we found was deep frying the matzah before you started.
Ooh, see? Just like you would a tortilla.
This is called the setup
exactly.
In broadcasting. So yeah, I was just dying to get you to talk about that. So what we've got is deep fried matzah, and I know you have fallen hard for that. And so what happens is they get crunchy and crispy, and now, of course, nachos. That makes sense. So your ingredients for these, plum tomatoes, white onion, jalapeno, fresh lime juice, some cilantro if you like it, extra virgin olive oil, a neutral oil for frying. What do you like?
I love canola oil.
Okay.
Neutral flavor. If you want to shell out for a little grapeseed oil, really amazing smoking point. I'm a huge fan of that.
Okay, so we've got grated cheddar or Mexican cheese or a blend, some pickled jalapenos too, avocado, sour cream, or you could use Greek yogurt. And I want you to tell me how this comes together. Tell me about the frying first.
We bring up a pot of oil to about 350 degrees, and you really approach it just like you would fry most chips or most vegetable chips.
Can I jump in and ask you a question? Because I'm a little bit scared of frying, as Chris knows. You know, when people start mentioning temperatures and thermometers, I start to think, uh-oh, do I really have to get it to 350 degrees, Chris? Yes, I do, he says. Okay.
Yes.
Why?
350 is really important to prevent things from getting soggy and kind of oil-drenched.
Yep.
Too low and things just absorb and become like a sponge of oil. Too high, obviously, they get way too dark, way too quick. So 350 is always that magical number for chefs where things get golden brown. They dehydrate the right amount so that they stay nice and crispy, but they have a long enough time in the oil to really dehydrate that amount that needs to in order to really maintain that crisp over time.
So Chris is nodding his head.
Yeah. And I have two words, though. Fry daddy. Buy one of those tabletop fryers.
There you go.
And it's just, it takes all the work out of frying. And some of them have tops on them now to where they got splatter.
We're going to come back to that in just a second. Okay, so you fry the nachos until they're golden, they're crispy. They come. How do you drain them?
Out they come from the fryer. I have a little tray or a plate set up with a couple layers of paper towels on them. I try to lay them out so that they drain pretty well in those paper towels and then salt them at this point. So you really want to do seasoning here to really wake them up.
How do you do your nachos? You do them in a cast iron skillet?
No, so these are actually, I'll lay them out in a sheet tray, lined with tin foil, and I spray with a little bit of Pam just to make life a little bit easier to get them off later. Before I started frying, I've already set my oven for about 400 degrees. I'm covering my matzah with all the cheese. I've already taken all those initial ingredients we listed, the tomatoes, the onions, the jalapeno, the lime juice, the cilantro, and I've mixed all that together and set it aside to sit for a pico de gallo topping. So
yum.
Isn't this fabulous? Isn't it? By the way, this recipe and information about this cookbook is on our website, foodschmooze.org. I don't care what your heritage is, your culture, your religion, no matter what. Who doesn't want to have matzah nachos? This is just fabulous. So, and how long in the oven?
Just a few minutes. 5 minutes inside the oven until the cheese melts.
Yep.
Then we top it with all of the pico de gallo. We cut up the avocado, do a little diced avocado across it, a few dollops of sour cream or Greek yogurt. I personally love Greek yogurt. And then
the
kicker for me and a lot of these recipes in the book, we really wanted to bring in some fun techniques that people don't really think about when they think about Passover and matzah. I would challenge anybody to try to find a kosher Passover pickled jalapeno out in the not gonna happen.
Yeah, we're gonna make this very popular for you. So David Kirchner, who is the recipe creator behind the book called Matzah. But Michelle Streit Heilbrunn is the author of the book and oversees the whole matzah empire. You've got 35 recipes in here for Passover, of course, but all year long, as you can see with these nachos. You can have them all the time. So matzah brei is something that I love. And if you don't know anything about this, we're talking about matzah crumbled up with smoked salmon and eggs, usually. But you've done something here, and Chris just made this. Chris, I want you to talk about how easy this was. You've done something which, to me, is like an inside-out bagel.
Totally easy. You just take the matzah and you run it under some water to, you know, soften them a little bit. You break them up into pieces, set it aside, and then you basically caramelize some onions, put a little butter in a pan, throw in your onions, cook them for 4 minutes or so until they get nice and caramelized. And then you whip some eggs, a little bit of salt and pepper, and then you throw that in on top of the caramelized onions. You throw in smoked salmon, a little bit of dill, some chives, and some capers. Oh, and before you put the egg in, you
but
throw
hear
your...
that, capers.
Yeah, capers.
Capers go inside. Yeah. So this, you're starting to see where the inside-out bagel idea comes in.
Yeah. But the matzah goes in the egg. So it's actually coated with the egg and inside the omelet. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And what I found is I had it, I'm always worried about our gluten-free people. So we try things both ways with matzah in it and matzah not in it. So it because of the capers, it had a very quite salty feel. But when you put the matzah in, that completely desalinates it, right?
Absolutely. The matzah really is that foil that kind of brings all of these elements together and lets them all kind of marry well. I would challenge your listeners, if they were gluten-free, a lot of the companies out there, including Streit's, is my partner on this book, do sell gluten-free matzah. And I won't say it'll work perfectly in every recipe in this book, but this recipe, especially when there's very quick soaking going on, it'll definitely work beautifully.
Good to know. See, we were wondering if there was gluten-free matzah on
really
the market.
Fantastic.
Not only is there, but you have it.
They do different kind of spelt flour matzahs. They're experimenting with a few others right now as well.
Wow. Cool. That's so good. All right. So this is David Kirchner, and this recipe, this matzah brei, is also Elio matzah brei, which everybody knows stands for, well, many people know, lox, eggs, and onions. I call this recipe the inside out bagel. So this is on our website too, and that's foodschmooze.org with information about the book matzah.
It passed my test because I had two portions.
Yeah, it did.
And I never go back for a second helping, but today I did because it was so good.
Yeah. There were a couple things in here I wanted to talk about in addition. I just don't want to run out of time, David, but you have this anytime brisket. And this is like turkey stuffing. On certain holidays, people have, you know, your own spaghetti sauce. People have family traditions and history. I'm always thinking, oh, what is everybody going to say? I'm not making anybody's brisket but Nana's brisket. But you've got an anytime brisket here, and this is really innovative. With matzah, you know, this is that Austrian Spätzle. So brisket, a little bit of oil again, garlic, bay leaves, thyme, tomato paste, red wine, chicken stock, whole carrots, extra virgin olive oil. And then how do you make the matzah spätzle?
Honestly, it is the easiest recipe in the world for something that feels so unique and different. I take about 2 cups of matzah cake meal. So this is the finer grind of matzah.
Where do you get that?
You can find it in most large supermarkets these days, especially around Passover time. If not, Amazon absolutely has it. You can even call up Stripes specifically, and they'll ship it out to you.
Crown in West Hartford.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite place. Okay, so you get the cake meal, and you mix with eggs and salt and chicken stock. Homemade would be best.
Exactly.
But then nutmeg. That's interesting.
Yeah, a little bit of nutmeg.
You like that, Chris?
Definitely.
Chris's mother is Austrian, so
I'm always checking with him. Yeah, they use a lot of nutmeg in the stuff like this. Definitely.
Okay, go ahead, David.
Yeah, that little bit of nutmeg, it made me almost think of gnocchi when you make that kind of Italian food as well. But we basically mix all that together. Then the technique comes in, which is the whole trick to this dish.
Yeah, this is the part I'm nervous about. Okay, because I look at your picture of what it turns out to be, and I think, now, how did he do that? So go ahead, tell me what to do.
So you take a large stock pot, fill it about 3/4 of the way with water, and we're talking, you know, 4 to 6 quart stock pot. Bring that water all the way up to a rolling boil over high heat, and then your mixture is going to be a pretty sticky, wet dough. And what you're doing is taking a colander with about, you know, maybe a half-inch sized holes on them, and you're putting this wet dough into the colander and using a rubber spatula and actually scraping it through the colander. So you get these little droplets of dough that are going to kind of fall from the colander into your boiling water.
That's it. Or you get a spetzel maker.
Or you get a spetzel maker.
And if you make it more than once a year, get a spetzel maker.
Really? Seriously?
Because it just takes all the work out of it. Yeah, you fill the little cartridge of it.
A colander with holes what did you say, half inch, did you say?
Between 1/4 to 1/2 inch.
Okay, and then you just rubbing with the back of a spoon or a spatula, and of course it's pushing the dough through, and there you go. Okay.
My mom makes it on the edge of a cutting board, which is the old school method. So they make the dough a little heavier. So not so wet. And then with the back of a knife, she just flicks the little pieces into the boiling water.
It's pretty wild
to watch.
That is amazing. Well,
this is a beautiful, I think, and
this recipe also is on our website, foodschmooze.org, with information about this book, Matzah, 35 Recipes for Passover and All Year Long. Michelle Strait Heilbrunn is creator of the Matzah Empire. And David Kirchner, our guest, is the recipe creator who collaborates with her. And it's so fun to talk with you about this stuff. Let's move right straight to dessert. And Chris, I'm not forgetting that I want to hear about this deep fryer that you were talking about that you can buy. Takes all the work out of frying. Okay, desserts in your book, David. You did matzah chocolate chip cookies. And what makes them as good as regular flour-based chocolate chip cookies, or better?
Oh, they're amazing.
With matzah?
So it's really this balance between the ingredients. So we're talking matzah cake meal, matzah meal, a little bit of baking soda that's inside of there as well, and then just that right amount of butter and sugar cream together.
Okay, so the texture, is there a graininess to the, because that's what I would imagine.
Because that's two different
grinds, right? The matzah cake and matzah meal are two different grinds. I would like that. So
absolutely.
Is that it?
I mean, you would think that there would be, but they just really blend together. And as they cook out, it's a drop cookie technique. It spreads out really beautifully on, you know, your silk pad or your baking on your silicone pad, and gets super crispy. The potato starch in there really acts to help it get that crunch.
Oh, you forget that's what's in matzah.
Super crispy.
Yeah.
Now, that's my idea of a chocolate chip cookie. I know
you
people like them
ones?
Soft. I just happen to be in the other camp. Yeah. And so this...
Well, these are...
Wow.
You're going to love these because it's that perfect balance. You get to the edge of the cookie, it's that crispy, snappy part, and the middle is just gooey and just gorgeous. I'm kind of sold myself.
David, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. David Kirchner is the recipe collaborator and creator behind this book, Matzah, 35 Recipes for Passover and All Year Long. Michelle Strait Heilbrunn of the Matzah Empire is the author of the book officially. And it's been a pleasure having you. And Chris, quickly, your fryer that you can buy is called a what?
The Fry Daddy. Everybody knows what a Fry Daddy is.
Now I'm mortified.
Now you know.
Come on, you know. I'm always learning on this show. So a Fry Daddy, and it makes everything easy?
It's a tabletop plug-in fryer. Has a lid on it so you can store it.
I don't have to worry about temperature.
If you fry more than once a year, you need to have one of these. They're like $25-$30.
I'm going for it. David, thank you. I'm going for you too. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Check out the book and our website, Food Schmooze.
news.org. Thank you, Chris. You know our slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.